Hi, everybody, and welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast, the post-WWDC 2015 crazy Apple Love Fest edition.
Yes.
With me there is Dr. Robert Carter. How you doing, Robert?
I am doing well. I always am happy after a WWDC keynote because they always surprise me with a few things. And today I was particularly delighted because even though they didn't say this in so many words, I think I really got what I mostly wanted was, I think we're likely to see an OS 10 and an iOS 9 that is going to be a lot more responsive and more stable and less buggy. I think they've honestly, at least my impression is, slowed down on the new features this year, even though there are quite a few of them. They've slowed down, and I think they're really focusing on performance and stability. That's kind of what I took away from it.
Me too. Yeah, performance was definitely emphasized over features in this particular keynote. It was a long, long keynote with definitely some surprises. So why don't we hop right into what was talked about? They didn't bore us with any numbers this time around. I really try to care when they talk about, you know, oh, we opened this store in this area and we've sold 500 billion of this and that. And I feel like that is something that's great for the earnings calls, but not so much for these keynotes. So I like the fact that they jumped right into it with introducing the new OS X, which is going to be called El Capitan, which I cannot say in anything but a French accent. I can't seem to do it in the Spanish mode in which it is intended. Some features were definitely talked about, my favorite being some of the natural language processing that goes into things like Spotlight and Mail, and I would also assume calendars as well. So one of the little funny things they did was they talked about find emails that I have ignored from Phil.
Yeah.
In order to demonstrate the natural language processing abilities of this new OS X update. I could see that being really helpful, especially for scatterbrains like me, who doesn't always remember what I named a file. So being able to put something like find all files where I talked about kittens or something like that,
yeah.
You know, could be really helpful. I really like that. Something else that they mentioned was being able to pin websites to Safari, pin tabs to Safari. Now, I don't quite understand, and maybe it's the visual thing, maybe it's not. I don't quite understand what the difference is between pinning a tab to Safari and having the smart websites. Would it be that those tabs would all open automatically?
I believe so. I think those tabs, as long as they're pinned, will open anytime.
Oh. Okay.
You open Safari, and so I think it's good if you know you want to be able to go back to a particular page while you're booking some airline flights or while you're doing something that's kind of ongoing. I think I gather that's kind of the point behind it, but we'll have to see actually how it works with VoiceOver once we have the chance to actually get our hands on it.
Right. I'm definitely excited to play with it. There's a developer beta that is out today, actually, and I have a second hard drive, and I think I'm going to plop it on there. But yeah, that's going to be interesting. A lot of what they talked about was stuff that they were fixing under the hood. They've redesigned the disk utility. They have optimized performance so that a lot of things are happening faster. App launches, app switching, things like that. And forgive us both, we are coming off of just sort of re-reviewing this stuff after listening to the keynote. So chances are we're going to miss some things. And these are just kind of our like raw, like spur of the moment, right after reaction. So again, forgive us if there's things we miss. But I really liked that a lot of what they talked about seemed to be making the system run more optimally, making sure that it's as secure as it possibly can be. There was some stuff with Metal having to do more with graphics and gaming, but you know, I'm all about some of those games could be accessible to us too. You never know.
Sounds like from what they were saying that Metal will also be good for CPU performance and maybe will help with battery life on the laptop. So it just felt like as they were describing it, a really solid update. I think there are going to be some improvements to Mail. We saw a couple things, saw them demonstrating a couple things with Mail. And in my opinion, Mail really needs some love at this point.
Yeah. They were saying something like Mail will be retrieved up to 2 times faster, which is definitely good.
I think really we're starting to see Apple realize that they need to slow down a bit. And it seems like they really are listening to people who are saying, look, we need more stability here.
And that's a wonderful thing because, you know, Apple historically didn't always do that. And in so much as we have not experienced as many of the problems as other people, we've definitely experienced some related to Yosemite. And it'll just be good to get back to a system that, if I may use an old and tired phrase, just works.
Yeah, we've heard that, haven't we? Yeah, I agree. And I want to follow up on one other thing that you said earlier when you were talking about the advanced features of Spotlight, letting you type in natural word searching. And I think this is really a good thing because that's one of the things that Google has really shined on in mm-hmm. in Android, is this Google Now capability where the device can deliver you a lot of context-based information. And
yep.
Now, in my opinion, if you go down the Google Now road with Google, you're doing it by giving them access to any and everything that they can find about you. And I think Apple is taking a very different approach where they're much more concerned about your privacy and not letting your information be used by other people and all that. And that's relatively important to me. I mean, I think it's a good thing. I'm not sure that I'm quite as excited about it perhaps as some people are. I think there's kind of I'm kind of in the middle. I'm glad they're concerned about it. But I do also see that there are some, you pay a bit of a price for that in features not being quite as rich, but maybe it's worth that price.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, as they said with OS X and iOS, they're working on how to do all of that stuff and get a hold of the information that they need to be really relevant to what you need on the device. So I think that the more they tie into how to do that without actually sending anything to servers and just, you know, data mining, as it were, what you already have on the device and not, you know, taking it out of that walled garden, I think it's going to be actually more feature rich, perhaps. I just feel like, you know, my concern with Google is always, you know, when are they going to just decide that they don't want to do this anymore and shut it down? I mean, they've done it with a couple of different services now. So with Apple, when they invest in a service, they really see it through to the best possible conclusion that it can be, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. And so OS X El Capitan is going to be available this fall, and it's going to be, I think, as you mentioned earlier, available in beta for the developers now, but also I believe there's going to be a public beta
in July. So if you want to sign up for any of the betas in a public beta form, you go to beta.apple.com. If you want to sign up as a developer to pay $99 a year to get access to not only iOS betas, but also Mac OS, OS X, excuse me, and Watch OS. That's at developer.apple.com. That's $99 a year. Again, always install with care.
It is good, though, I think, honestly, for people who are set up to do some beta testing. It is good for us voiceover users to have people testing things before these operating systems are released.
Oh, absolutely. I have some friends who are really involved, you know, as am I, in beta testing and filling out bug reports, which hopefully result in less bugs when the final version of the OS ships. And the more people we have doing that, the less likely there is that there will be any kind of like showstopper bugs. Of course, we can't catch everything, but the less likelihood that there will be of those bugs coming into the final version. And yeah, it's a bit of an investment of time and sometimes money if you're not going to go the public beta route, but I think it's worth it. And in fact, I've actually gotten myself to test iOS 9, which they also talked about at WWDC today. I got myself an iPad that's going to be coming soon just for testing the betas. iOS 9 is another operating system update that kind of marries some new features with a more stable, secure environment. They talked a lot about Siri improvements. Siri is actually more deeply integrated into the operating system now. So from what I was able to gather from the keynote, Siri is becoming much more than just a voice assistant where you talk to him or her and he or she speaks back to you. Siri is becoming just a full-on assistant, which will allow you to do things like, for example, create calendar invitations or accept calendar invitations from within things like emails. There's something called proactivity, which will get a feel for what apps you need when. And so, for example, if you go running or walking on a treadmill or what have you in the morning, when you plug your headphones in, it could pop up the music app with the now playing screen on your lock screen. They did an example of if you meditate in the morning, your favorite meditation app could automatically pop up in the lock screen when you first unlock the phone. So we're seeing Siri becoming a lot more involved in the things we do, sort of in ways that are a little bit different, but I think ultimately they're going to really be helpful to us in the end.
Looks like Siri's going to operate a lot more in the background. So Siri's going to automatically offer to fill in that appointment on the calendar when an appointment shows up in the email, or like you said, automatically open an app that you typically use at a particular time during the day. And I guess that'll be good. And I'm assuming that you can turn that off if you don't want it doing that particular thing, or you can override it, of course. But it is interesting because it does seem like more and more the phone is thinking about what your needs are and trying to anticipate and meet them. And I don't know, how do you feel about that?
I love it because because I have a hard enough time keeping track of the things that I need to do and remembering to put stuff into my phone and all that stuff. So if the phone can take a little bit of that burden away from me, then I think it's really good. And again, as long as it is not compromising my privacy and security, which again, it's not going to, because it's going to keep everything that it does on the device, so confidential between you and your device, then I'm all for it.
I think we're honestly seeing some of the wisdom that Apple demonstrated when they went to the 64-bit processors, because these phones can do a lot.
Yes, they absolutely can. Another thing that really excited me was the maps are getting a nice little overhaul. And one of the big things they're going to incorporate are transit directions, access to different transit systems. I believe San Francisco Bay Area was included on the list of initial cities that are going to roll out with transit directions. One of the really great things as a blind person is that it has maps of all the different stations. So it will be able to figure out what station you're leaving and what exit you're leaving, and give you relevant walking directions to either whichever destination you want to walk to or the next transit stop that you have to go to in order to continue your route. I'm really all for the blindness specific GPS apps, but I feel like in incorporating these transit directions, I feel like maybe Apple is making it less likely that I will need to use them as often. And another thing that I know that they have been working on is indoor navigation as well. And if I know that Blind Square recently announced that, you know, through the magic of iBeacons, they were going to be working on indoor navigation too. So anything that allows me to go to an unfamiliar place and navigate either indoors or outdoors, but especially indoors, because that is something that has been kind of closed off to us until now, is a great feature in my book. So I'm really looking forward to the new maps.
I just listened to a Main Menu podcast from last week, and there was a guy on Main Menu who has done indoor mapping of the hotel where the ACB convention is going to be taking place this year in Dallas. And he's got this whole mapping set up on an app, and it runs on the iOS devices. And so everything that you're going to need to find, the typical convention goer will need to find, like the registration table, the meeting rooms, restrooms, food places, all that stuff is there. And you simply tap on what you need to go to, tap on registration area. And since the phone knows where you are, it tells you, okay, the registration area is three halls down, you know, 600 feet away. And as you start walking, it tells you as you're getting closer, or tells you if you've gone off course and how to correct that. And so it certainly appeared from what he was saying, it looks like you could literally take this app, even if you didn't know the hotel, and follow the breadcrumbs, if you will, to bring yourself right to the registration table. So
now that is cool. We need more of that.
Yeah, I would love to be able to go up there and try it out. Unfortunately, I won't be able to get there, but
yeah, me neither.
I bet we'll get a report from someone.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure one of our other esteemed podcasting colleagues will give us some sort of demonstration of that as well. One of my very favorite features, upcoming features that was talked about in iOS 9 is called News. They're actually going to be replacing the newsstand, which accessibility of that newsstand platform varied depending on the apps that were running inside of it. But now they're going to have more of a Flipboard style news section where folks can contribute as individuals content that can be published in news. Of course, they're going to have major partners like The Verge and
New York Times,
a bunch of others that have just completely slipped my mind. But I could see this being a really revolutionary, great way to get the news, because right now I have a couple of different news apps that I rely on.
Me too.
They all kind of vary in terms of accessibility. I get 18,000 push notifications every time some major piece of news breaks. So yeah, it would be kind of cool to be able to just centralize all of that in one news app. And I wonder to some extent how much that will continue to replace RSS for me as well.
Yeah, I wonder that too. And I believe it was a woman who demonstrated the news app.
Yes, it was.
And so, you know, kudos for her doing that. And she did a really nice job. But one of the things it looks like it's going to be good at is letting you customize the news to limit it to collecting for you the types of news that you're interested in, like technology news or sports or books or whatever topics you're particularly interested in. And I think then it's going to create a set of favorites with these articles, and hopefully it'll be fully accessible. I have no reason to think that it won't be.
I really like this idea of customization, because I'm here to tell you that a lot of what these breaking news apps right now think is breaking news is so not, at least to me.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to be able to have the news exactly the way I want it.
I am too. And being a person who really thrives on keeping up with the news, I think this is a big deal.
Me too. I can't wait. Another thing that was discussed, thing number three, was Watch OS 2.0. The primary focus of the discussion of WatchOS 2.0 was that native apps are going to be coming to the watch. So the way it works right now is that the UI for apps will run on your watch, but a lot of the heavy lifting is still done by the phone. With the introduction of native third-party apps, everything will be able to run on the watch. So that's going to be exciting. We're looking at different ways to use the digital crown, which I'm kind of interested to see how that will work from the perspective of a voiceover user, using the digital crown to move forwards and backwards in time, as it were. They actually called it time traveling, where you could see what's going on ahead in your calendar or in the weather and stuff like that. One of the things they mentioned for developers was being able to take advantage of the microphone and play long and short form audio, and also short form video through the Apple Watch speaker or a Bluetooth headset. So should I take that to mean that I can finally just kind of listen to my music or audiobook on the watch if I would want to? I can't really think of many instances where I would want to, but I can think of a few.
Well, especially with a Bluetooth headset, that's a pretty small speaker on the watch, but I suppose you could listen to a book on it.
Yeah, if I just wanted to run and do something real quick and I just wanted to have it piping through the speaker, that would be kind of nice for a short-term solution.
What Apple did, which I believe was the right thing, is they have kind of eased into this watch OS gradually and offered a limited set of options to developers, and they're now opening that door a bit. And I think they really wanted to see how people would react to the watch, see what battery life would be like, see how people were actually making use of it. And so now I think we're going to see a broader spectrum of possibilities and options this fall. And of course, there'll be pros and cons, and there'll be issues with how well these apps work at first. Some of them work great, some of them probably not so well. We'll all be rethinking probably how we're going to maximize our battery life. But this is definitely forward progress, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I would agree with you completely, especially considering the fact that the watch at this point has only been out for about 6 weeks. I mean, we're already talking about watchOS 2.0, which is pretty amazing. Some of the other stuff that I completely forgot about that they talked about was you will be able to reply to emails right on the watch. I would assume using dictation. I don't know if they have the little quick reply phrases like they have in the messages, but certainly using dictation. Another thing that they talked about was better HomeKit and HealthKit integration, opening up those APIs so that you can actually sync data between your favorite health apps and the HealthKit, and being able to apply that information from your favorite apps towards things like your move goals, your exercise goals, stuff like that. So that's very exciting too. I really don't find, because I'm so new to health and fitness in a lot of ways, I don't really find that I use a lot outside of Apple's built-in apps, but it's good to know it's there.
Yeah, and I think we'll use more as they become more friendly, and it becomes more possible to open that door more. And I've heard a lot of people who are into health and fitness say they really want that cross-pollination to be able to report back what they're doing, tracking in other apps into their HealthKit data. So it's also new. I mean, that's why we're seeing so many changes happen. It is amazing to me, honestly, that they made WatchKit 2.0 available for developers to start working on today. So that is moving really fast.
Oh, yeah.
The whole watch thing, you know, is interesting to me because, in my opinion, even version 1 came out of the gate very feature-rich.
Yes, I agree.
And for the most part, what it came out with worked, at least on my wrist, pretty well.
I have not really had any crashes or anything. I've had some things that I wish would load a little bit faster, but other than that, I mean, for a 1.0, this is solid. And now 1.1 that we're up to, it's really solid.
Yeah, things are loading a little faster for me in 1.1. And one really nice app is the Overcast podcasting app.
Yes.
It works really well. I love being able to load up a podcast from my watch and have it sent into my Bluetooth headphones, which are paired to my phone. And it's especially nice when you sort of have your hands occupied doing something else, and you just need to quickly change to another podcast. You don't have to get your phone out and do all that. So
right, because the whole point of Bluetooth is you're not always by your phone. So I like the fact that I could be across the house with my headset and just change the podcast on my watch and have my phone still, you know, charging away on the table.
Yeah.
And it all works out really beautifully.
Yeah, it really does work out well. They did mention briefly that there are some changes coming to Apple Pay, a lot more retailers have been added. And one thing I'm really excited about is you're going to be able to start buying a lot more tickets for things like tickets to ride public transportation in London, for example, with your with Apple Pay. So, of course, you can do that with your Apple Watch or with your phone. And so Apple has so many things that they are developing all at once. And you mentioned briefly HomeKit. You know, I'm pretty excited about that. I think it's going to be really cool that we're going to be able to, before long, unlock our doors with our watches, control our thermostats, change our lights, do all kinds of things around the house. You know, and it's all going to be combined into an integrated facility called HomeKit that I think is going to run on these devices, almost certainly including, even though they didn't talk about it today, almost certainly including the Apple TV. So it's going to give you sort of a hub for controlling everything and a way to do it, you know, from wherever you are, because there's going to be a connection there to the internet. So there's a lot coming, and it's coming pretty fast.
Really fast. I mean, the notion that all this is going to hit, you know, by the fall, it's pretty amazing. Last and certainly absolutely not least, Apple has announced, as most of us expected, Apple Music, which is a really interesting three-pronged sort of competitor to services like Spotify. The first prong is that you will be able to have curated playlists like you can on Spotify, human curated playlists. You'll be able to have access to top recommended albums. You'll be able to have access, as far as I can tell, to the entire iTunes catalog for just on-demand streaming. And this is all for $10 a month starting at the end of June, but you'll be able to get a 3-month free trial in order to give it a go and see if you think it's worth canceling your Spotify, or like me and the 12 other people who still subscribe to Rhapsody, my Rhapsody subscription.
For those who have families, they're offering a family plan subscription for $14.95 or $15 a month, essentially.
Yeah, I think Jeremy and I are gonna take advantage of that, because, hey, I mean, saving $5 is saving $5, you know.
So I know you were, you know, you're heavily into music. You were a music major, and so music is really important to you. Did the way they described and demoed this service appeal to you? I mean, do you think it's likely to be better than what's out there now, or what was your impression of it?
I admittedly have not really jumped on board to a lot of these curated playlisty type services, mainly because there's been such spotty accessibility in the various services.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to a service that's going to enable me to have that human touch, as it were, in discovering not only new music, but figuring out, you know, a playlist that appeals to my particular tastes. Because, you know, I can play a classic rock station on Pandora, and a lot of the songs will be great, a lot of them will be crap, you know?
Yeah.
I would really like to be able to listen to a classic rock playlist, for example, that is tailored to something like whatever mood I'm in, or that takes from what's already existing in my purchased music and kind of building on that, allowing me to maybe discover new music or getting songs from those albums, you know, that I might or might not have. Basically just more finite control over what, you know, my listening experience is going to be. That appeals to me greatly. Being able to have a music experience that is built all around me, basically like, you know, Pandora on steroids, or even iTunes Radio on steroids.
Yeah.
Let's face it, because there have been some things with iTunes Radio that have not made me entirely happy. But
yeah,
I think having the Beats staff on board for this new Apple Music is going to just change the whole game.
Well, some things that appealed to me about it is, one, I think they are going to do a pretty good job of figuring out what I like. As you said, partially based on what you've already purchased from iTunes, partially based on some questions that you will answer when you open the app about what kind of music you like, who some of your favorite artists are, things like that. They're going to gather information, but again, they're going to get it in an honest, straightforward way, not by, you know, tracking what you buy in the grocery store. So it is, I think, likely to be a pretty sophisticated system in terms of hopefully really giving you the kind of things that you seriously do want to hear, not just some computer algorithm out there guessing what you might want to hear and not getting it right a lot of the time. So that's kind of part one, and I don't think there will be accessibility issues, because it's going to essentially, as I understood it, replace the music app that's currently on the phone.
Right. It's going to be incorporated into the music app.
So I think we're going to be in business as far as accessibility goes. And I don't know what this honestly means for iTunes Match. I don't know whether it replaces it or whether it will continue separately. It's almost like, you know, paying the $10 a month is almost like having iTunes Match and more, because it gives you supposedly access to everything in the iTunes catalog. So I'm not sure.
Right. I'm not really sure if those two are going to coexist, or if iTunes Match is going to be subsumed by Apple Music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's $25 a year, so really, I'm sure that there are times when I'll, for example, want to upload my own music, which may or may not be already available on iTunes. So unless it is, you know, explicitly stated that it's being subsumed, I may just keep it, again, because it's, you know, it's 5 cups of coffee, basically.
Right.
you know, just to keep, just to hang on to it.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. We're not quite sure how those two will fit together. But you got a good point, though. iTunes Match would be needed if you wanted to upload your own music, I assume.
Right. The second thing that they talked about that I'm not sure I'll use as much, but really I'm just more in it for the playlists, is a 24-hour music radio station called Beats One. I'm assuming that there are going to be multiple Beats stations, and these are stations that are curated and DJed by different DJs, one based in LA, one based in London, I believe one also based in New York.
Right.
And I think these guys are all former BBC DJs, at least one I know is.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be playing what they say music that is just great. I have no doubt that some of it may be great. I'm not as into the new stuff, so it will be interesting to see how much I actually listen to that music. But again, it's just something cool to have. I think that, you know, anything that exposes us to new music and new ideas is a good thing.
It was interesting, the idea that this is a worldwide radio station. There are going to be millions of people potentially listening to it.
Right, and there's going to be, I believe, you know, breaking pop culture news, and I would assume as they grow and expand to include more stations, there may be either genre specific or perhaps different, you know, talk stations and stuff like that. So I could see it expanding to be even, it already sounds kind of cool and intriguing, but I could see it just even becoming more so as the service expands and as more listeners come on board.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether I personally really like it or, you know, it's kind of one of those things that's interesting, but doesn't really float my boat. I don't know yet. We'll just have to try it out and see, but it's the second piece that's being offered.
Right. Another thing that has the potential to be cool for people who follow, I would imagine, newer artists is this whole social aspect of Apple Music, in which artists will actually be able to post things like pictures and lyrics and I would imagine little status updates right on their page, their profile page on Apple Music. And you as the consumer have the choice of following that artist. Now, for me, a lot of the artists I listen to are not either dead or just not as into the whole social scene, and yet everybody's kind of getting into it. So it'll be interesting to see how that how that plays out. Again, not sure how much I'm going to use this portion of it, but it's definitely interesting just from like a sociology standpoint to see how this plays out.
I believe they can also post music and videos to their page if they choose.
Right, no, you're right. Yeah, I forgot about that. And that would be interesting because I do follow, you know, I'm into Bruno Mars, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll follow him, you know.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where this takes off. I mean, Apple has tried this social thing once before and it didn't go anywhere, but this is kind of a different take on it where it's really highlighting the artist. And they've always done that. I mean, they've always talked about how important music is to the Apple culture and they've always featured artists. So it kind of makes sense that they might move in this direction.
Right. And now that they have Jimmy Iovine, who sounded like a mafioso.
He did.
It was great. But yeah, now that they have Iovine and the power of Beats behind them, I think that we will not see a repeat of the disaster that was Pink. I think that it's going to be much better. I hope so. Yeah, it was great to see out of the presenters who were on stage, two of them were female executives, and that was just way cool.
Well, they've been, you know, Tim Cook has been saying for a while that he wanted to put his money where his mouth is and mm-hmm. make Apple a more diverse company, make its employees more diverse. And you know, honestly, I think part of that has to be putting more women into the limelight. And I was really glad to see them do that today. So
me too. That was fabulous. You know, I was very disappointed that we didn't have any British narration of aluminium and all that. I was like, where's Johnny?
Yeah, Johnny was just not speaking up today.
I know.
But I thought overall it was really a well-done keynote. I guess I thought in some respects, not in a bad way, but in some respects I thought it was a little bit less formal, maybe a little less polished in some sense, but that made it seem a little more natural to me.
Yeah, it was just like we were all kind of hanging out at this place and talking about these new features that are coming, and it felt like the presentation, like the presenters were just there in the living room with us.
And I want to go on and get this out pretty quickly so people can hear if they didn't have a chance to watch the keynote live or haven't read too much about it, so they can at least hear our take on how it went. Anything else you can think of that you feel like we need to add or that we've missed?
Nothing I can think of right now, but everybody just stay tuned because it's about to get real interesting yet again.
It certainly is, and we'll be talking more about the things that were announced as they actually come to fruition this summer and this fall especially. And we'll be back soon with more because we've got some exciting things coming up ourselves. You and I are going to have the pleasure of going to MacStock in Chicago.
I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, and that's going to take the place of what really used to be the Mac conference in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm, Macworld Expo.
I don't know if it's fair to say it takes the place of Macworld Expo, but it's something that Apple enthusiasts are doing since there isn't Macworld Expo this year. So it's going to be fun, and we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, and everything else is going to go on this summer.
Yep, it's going to be a fun, crazy ride, as always.
So if any of these people who are listening want to get in touch with us and they might want to send us an email, how might they go about that?
Well, you can send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com.
And I promise to try to pull your message out from all the spam that comes to that address. Going to have to work on that.
Yeah.
All right, guys, have a good week, and thanks for listening to this one about WWDC keynote, which was pretty exciting today. And this is Robert the Tech Doctor. I will say so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.